Okay, I'm gonna hit record. Like I said, we're gonna see what happens because the world's kind of backwards lately, so
I certainly agree with that.
I was just talking with a friend who he and I live at my elevation. Forget about, geographic latitude and longitude. I live at 150 feet, 115 feet above sea level. He lives at 800 feet
115
above sea level.
above sea level,
Yeah.
huh?
So there are days where I'm in the fog and he's in the blue sky looking down on the fog. It's that kind of perspective kind of thing. But what's it like where you are right now?
What's it like? It is very cold, and there was it, horrifically windy for the last few days. I mean, just it was hauling ass, the wind. Trees were blowing all over the place and stuff like that. Other stuff was blowing around that people had left outside. It was really bad. And
And
now
before,
the route now the now it's like zero wind, just went to zero, and the weather's very cold. It's exceedingly cold. And and it looks nice outside though,
okay.
so what can I say?
So pardon me. So I already made a screw up. So welcome to Intriguing Creativity with Steve Smilinski, who's speaking to you from Bertrandville, Pennsylvania, where they just had windstorms. And I'm taking this is Tom Trimbath speaking to everybody from the Quimper Peninsula on the Olympic Peninsula, on a peninsula outside of Seattle in Washington State, where we just had a bunch of windstorms and things like that. But we were talking about before. See, that's the thing. We just record these conversations because scripts. I don't think anybody has scripted what's going on in the world right now.
Yeah, it's kind of a erratic mess going on that you never can know exactly where it's going to turn into from second to second.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I'm finding, I think one of my stocks is up 30% or something like that.
Nice.
But that's because if Elon Musk is to manage to disband NASA, all those things will now become government contracts, and folks are rushing to buy stock in these companies that already they don't own Cape Canaveral. They don't. So folks aren't thinking this through, it's just.
I think a lot of people are not thinking a lot of things through right now. And one of them is what really is the financial situation and how's it going to impact them in terms of stocks they might own or whatever else is going on financially for them. And they're just hoping. They're hoping. And they're talking to their friends and making pretend that they're pretty sure something good is going to happen because everybody wants something good to happen with anything financial right now, right? People are pretty nervous. And I don't blame them. It's screwy times, tough times. And we're just at the point where we're going to start to find out in a big way what's going to happen with a new president. And it's a difficult situation to try and think through and discuss with anybody,
Oh, yeah.
because nobody has a clue what's going on, and half the people are scared to death, and half the people don't know whether they should be scared to death or happy, and the rest of the people are just wandering around hoping they stay out of the way.
I mean, it's a conversational minefield.
Yeah.
I mean, because it is really a case of, well, there's an awful lot of stuff that was based on ideology, theoretical kind of stuff, academic sort of stuff. And now it's like, oh, we're really here? And this is where, and I'll give a plug to our own podcast, which folks are not listening to. Thank you for listening. But, you know, this is our 12th episode.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so we've been doing this, as of this, we'll be, have done this for a year. And I was reflecting on that while before the call. And I realized, you know, this title that we have, which is Intriguing Creativity, I think that for the next few years, it's going to be nothing but creative solutions to, oh my God, what in the world would this, who brought this on?
And it's going to be intriguing for sure.
For sure.
Yes, we did a good job with that title without really knowing what we were doing.
Which means if we're not knowing what we're doing, we're like everybody else right now, which is just...
Yes, yes, yes. I had somebody, my wife's father actually, tell me something that he really needed me to hear. Yes, this morning.
Yeah.
Actually, earlier today, and you know, I was like, okay, fine, whatever. He likes to call me up and tell me stuff that he can yak about to me. He needs a buddy to just yak to, you know.
Does he listen to this podcast, by the way?
Oh yeah, yeah, and yeah, you know, because he has to. I force him to. no, he likes to yak about his history. He has an interesting history. He grew up on a farm.
Yeah.
So has a lot of interesting farm background and knowledge and stuff. Anyway, but the reason I thought of that is because of what you said, and his thing that he needed to talk to me about and tell me was that I really need to start wearing more warmer clothes than I wear normally.
Okay.
And he was very vehement about my need to get really heavy duty long pants on all the time and a heavy shirt that, you know, goes up to my top of my head, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
He was pretty big on that I need warmer. And, because it's freezing cold here. And luckily, not too many people tell me that when they run into me or say anything to me, because it's kind of weird to me. Because I always am wearing the lightest clothes of anybody that's around as soon as the weather gets cold. And for those of you that are wondering why, I'll tell you a bit about my history. I spent a huge amount of time living up on a mountain in a cabin in the coldest part of North America, where we got huge snowstorms and hugely cold weather. And I heated with wood and lived in this cabin and wandered around and got really used to the fact that I could get around all the time, no matter what the weather was like, in a pretty light, very light jacket and just a little shirt. And I just got so used to it.
Yeah,
that I just would, wherever I went, and I'm still like that.
Yeah, congratulations.
And people look at me and they're wearing like parkas and
yes.
stuff. They say, Steve, you're wearing like a summer shirt, mm-hmm. and your legs are totally bare to this freezing cold weather that's out here.
Yeah,
you know, and I say, yeah. Welcome to people that spent their whole life living in really cold weather.
Well, and, you know, as a bicyclist.
You got used to it. Just really got to the point where, oh, this is okay.
Well, there's so many things we do at a convention. And, you know, as a bicyclist, most bicyclists, if you look at them, they're not wearing anything more than shorts.
Mm-hmm.
And when you realize, for one thing, if you're bicycling, your legs are busy. they're warming themselves up already.
Yeah.
And I would not wear rain pants or thermals unless it got down to the point where I shouldn't be bicycling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so hypothermia weather and things like that. Because as much as you can say, well, I'm going to ride and I'll be warm and all that sort of thing, you also have to worry about if you get a flat and it's dark, how warm are you while you're changing that flat, you know, in December?
Well, that's a good point. That's a good point. Luckily, yeah. since I'm a walker, not a bicyclist, I don't have to worry about changing flats.
Yes, this is true.
I have to worry about, like, freezing solid, I guess, is what people keep telling me. But so far, it's never happened.
So I just figure I'm
very warm-bodied or hot-bodied or some such thing, and it just works.
I'm gonna skip that straight line about you having a hot body. I'm just gonna.
I'm telling you, it really works. And now that I live in a house that actually has like heaters instead of, you know, wood and things like that, what I've noticed is that I probably have the least costly expense for warming the house of anybody because I, of course, keep the house cool also so that it balances with when I go outside just wearing a shirt. And so it's relatively inexpensive to do that.
So I'm just wondering, because, you know, I live in a tsunami. I don't live in the tsunami zone. I can see it from, you know, a casual drive. Earthquake zone, of course, I'm far enough north that we get cold snaps and things like that. And one of the things that I miss from not, because now I live in a tiny house, and it's harder to have all the extra things I used to have for power outages and things like that. And I'm wondering if folks like you and I, who are at least more aware of being prepared for emergencies, are going to be more prepared for this next few years than folks who have been on the 16th floor of a condo in downtown wherever. Because if you interrupt any services, you and I have got some fallbacks. But if you have an interruption in service of anything in a skyscraper, you might be doing a lot of walking just to get down to the street level.
Well, that's it. And I wander around outside in the cold weather, as I already mentioned, wearing a fairly light shirt that doesn't have heavy sleeves on it or anything. And I'm totally fine. And I do whatever I'm outside doing. And don't worry about it. And I wander around, I take walks, and I come back, and I'm okay. And so,
let me interrupt then. I mean, because we keep talking about all these dire consequences of a new administration, the disruption and things like that. But do you actually think every people's lives are going to be disrupted to the point where it's not academic? It's not a, well, the next time we have a chance to elect, I'm going to elect or vote, I'm going to go do this. Or is it going to be a case of folks have to have more beans in the house or have another source? I mean, seriously, because fundamental change may not happen until you've made changes to the fundamentals.
Well, it's a really interesting question. I've sort of had versions of that question with a number of people since this whole last change in the world we all live in has come about. And everybody seems to be sort of wondering that same question, some version of that same question.
Yeah.
What does it mean? And my theory about it is just my theory. I don't have any science to base this on. My theory is that there's a lot of things that I keep seeing, we all keep seeing, are being proposed that are going to be happening to the United States.
Right.
And all kinds of things related that are going to change significantly. And I think what's going to happen is people are hearing about some of them. They're not really understanding what they mean because they're not really sure exactly what will happen when they happen. So they don't really know what it means.
Right.
They don't believe half of it. Either that it's prophesizing too much or it's prophesizing too little. They just don't know the answer to it. And they don't really know if crazy people are going to come out wielding, you know, really big, heavy guns and start whacking around at people or whatever, because you hear some of that out there too with people that can't seem to get enough guns piled up in their closets, you know, just in case something happens, they're ready. And although I tend to think those are the ones that are going to cause the thing to happen.
Yep. You know? Yeah, self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah. So it's kind of an interesting situation. But I think what's going to happen is some of the things that people have heard about and sort of understand but aren't all that worried about are actually going to happen in ways they're going to cause them suddenly to realize that this is real and this is going to cause me real problems. And I'm thinking about things about the fact that because our president has decided to get rid of everybody who's an immigrant in the country, which people don't exactly understand what that means, except you happen to live in farm country. All the farmers understand exactly what it means. It means is that the price of food is going to quadruple or quintuple or sextuple or some big volume, because what the people that are saying we're going to get rid of all of these immigrants don't seem to understand is they're all the people that pick all of the vegetables in the country.
So there's the problem. So what do you think is going to be the solution?
Well, the solution is going to be, first of all, the price is going to go way up.
Yeah, that's not a solution, though.
No, not a solution, but it's a happenstance. And I think that the other thing that's going to happen is that it's going to turn out that there are going to be more people that are going to either not be thrown out of the country or going to be invited into the country. Because the people that are running companies and so forth, not just farms, but other companies too, that require on the immigrants to run their companies, build stuff in their factories, whatever it is, are all going to say, we've got to change this. We've got to get these people to come and do the work. That's the only thing we can do, because there are no people in the country to do this work if we send them all home.
Okay, and so let me throw this other possibility in then. Because the other possibility, and it's probably not going to be one thing or the other, it's probably going to be a mix, but robotic pickers for various crops.
There could be robotic pickers, you're right. All of a sudden there could be a lot of robots wandering around. And I don't know what the implications of that financially would be, because you got to build all those robots and maintain them and do whatever else you got to do.
And they may not be built in America.
Yeah, they may not be built in America, and keep them going and all that kind of stuff. But there's certainly going to be some changes happening because of some of the things. Will definitely occur. Other things probably won't, and we're all going to have to rethink what it means in the world around us.
Yeah, I mean, because when I hear that they're going to get rid of all the immigrants, of course, the one thing that comes to mind is my whole lineage, which none of which is Native American. You know, mine's Polish and Welsh, and you know.
Well, I was going to say there's not a whole lot of people in the United States that are actually Native Americans. If you sit back and you take a look at the histories mm-hmm. of people,
including the people who are making the comments about immigrants.
Yeah, including that. I mean, my family are the collection of people that led to my family are all people from somewhere else. And, you know, I mean, I don't think any of them think of themselves in the way, in immigrant way that people are talking about it now. But if you go back and you take a look and you say, okay, so exactly what's your background? None of them say, the United States of America.
Uh-huh.
You know, all kinds of other places, but not that.
So I'll throw this one out, because this is the era to talk about such wild things. But there's a, you talk about, you know, the United States of America, and I key off of the word united, because at this point I don't think we are united. But there's one scenario that's been played around that was not that we would have war. It wouldn't necessarily be civil war.
Mm-hmm.
But it involves Canada and Mexico. And if it sounds like there's some unrest up there, and there's definitely unrest down here, and there's definitely unrest in Mexico.
Yeah.
Where it wouldn't start with the United States, because we talk and we don't act as much as some other countries do. But that the Quebecois, the separatist faction of Quebec,
right,
the province of Canada, they would say, okay, this is the time we're going to go.
Oh.
At which point, if they say that, and they've talked about it in the past, then you talk about the other places talked about seceding, which is Texas. And well, if the folks in Quebec can do it, well, we should be able to do it down here. And now what you've done is you've taken out Quebec and Texas.
And Texas is talking about it all the time.
Right.
They're big on, we'd like to be elsewhere than the U.S.
So one of the possibilities then is if the Plains states and the Plains provinces, so mm-hmm. forget the coasts, if the Plains states and the Plains provinces, they go, well, we'd rather be with Quebec. We'd rather be with Texas. Then you end up with East Coast and West Coast, North and South, and then whether or not the East Coast splits into North and South.
Except they do have a problem. All of the ones that want to secede do have a problem. One of the problems, the big problem that they have is most of them haven't really done the thinking to figure out, do the places they want to secede and join actually want them? Or are they going to come knocking on the door and saying, here we are, we're Texas, and we're now... whatever they decided they want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And they get there and the door is locked, because those people say, you guys have enough problems.
Uh-huh. Oh, I've already seen that. I saw that with the first time that Trump got elected, which was, I jokingly on Facebook said, you know, I can bicycle to Canada from here in a day. I've done it before. And a friend actually said, no, we don't want any of you.
Yes,
and it's like, okay, you know, that was a friendship that was just, you know, that, and I may have been doing mine as a joke and she may have been doing hers as a joke, but you can't tell on social media sometime. But
well, yeah, and if you think about it, I mean, you think about it from the Canada perspective. Canada has a pretty interesting country.
Oh, yeah.
They're pretty together about lots of stuff. Lots of people like to go and visit there and, you know, hang out and do whatever they do in Canada. And the people that I know that live in Canada and the times that I've spent some time in Canada,
yeah.
I look around and I say to myself, this does not look like a place that these people are like dying to become part of Texas or part of, you know, take your pick, mm.
right?
I mean, I don't hear people saying anything like that. I hear them saying, we love Canada. Canada is just a wonderful place to be. It's got this great water over here, and you can, you know, blah, 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 blah about Canada. And I sort of understand it, because it is a nice place to go and hang out and visit and see what's going on and so forth.
But one of the models that spawns off of that idea of another version of the United States, so a dis-United States, would be that it's called the let's see if I can say this right, the Europeanification of the North America. So instead of three large countries, we end up with something more like Europe, where each country is smaller, and you end up with a big economy that's interconnected, but at the same time they're actually discrete units.
Anyway,
you see, that's what they were getting at. Because the other thing that happens then is, does the south part of British Columbia and the north part of the Northwest go together? Does the southwest of the United States and the northwest of Mexico, do they gang up? Not gang up, but find common ground. So it's an interesting sort of thing. But the problem is that I think we talk about unintended consequences and these things that are academic. I think we're entering into a time when some of the unimaginable things will happen.
Well, and it's interesting when you start to think about it in all the varieties, as you just did with one of the varieties of ways that things could break up of the United States. And because one of the issues is, how does it all work if you start breaking up like that?
Right.
All of a sudden, you've got all these independent little groups of people doing whatever they're doing, and they're trying to keep the governments running, because you still need somebody to keep things running so that, the electricity will run and stuff like that, and there will be money available to cover things that need to be paid for in the various new little townlets that are going to be started up.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you end up in a situation.
They have to be, governors or some kind of people to help manage some of this stuff so that it operates and that people can do stuff.
Well, you end up with something that is very...
But we do need some people to be running stuff.
And that's where you get back into the example that we're actually watched, which was the Soviet Union breaking up into all these independent countries.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, power lines and pipelines go across borders. And, oh my God, what do you do with the military bases?
Right.
And yet, this did happen. And they did find at least solutions that were good enough. They're failing now. But at the same time, it's not like it can't happen because of that. Something can happen. It can just be a real mess.
Well, that's it. And then it becomes a question of who are the people that wind up being the ones that are in charge, and how smart are they? How knowledgeable are they? How financially astute are they? So that they actually have some skills to make it run reasonably well.
And that's where I come back to what individual actions, because while they're going to be figuring out all that stuff, and I'm not in any of those positions of power or influence or anything like that. So I come around and go, okay, so there's a dance instructor I know. What difference is it going to make in their life? Probably not much. But there are folks that work on the ferry system around here.
Where they go, what kind of dancing they'll be able to do.
There's that too.
Wind up in Canada, a country that becomes part of Canada, let's say, an old piece of a country that becomes part of Canada. The dancing they do will probably be different than the dancing they're doing in your little town where you now live.
And actually, the term out here is Cascadia.
Cascadia.
If you want to draw the simple borders of Cascadia, you draw British Columbia, Washington, Oregon, and then you start getting into, we should take part of Northern California. Okay, so, and now you start going, how far, and we probably wouldn't go all the way east, and you get into all these details of, okay, so the other border is down the Pacific crest, the crest of the mountains, and those things, that's the sort of thing it'll take a generation to figure out.
Well,
but I keep coming back to this thing that a lot of folks are still talking about. We're seeing change, but they're still acting as if it's all academic. Except for the folks that I know who are getting their passports updated. And the folks that I know that are going to Costa Rica to find out if they actually want to live there. The folks actually going to Greece and finding out if they want to live there. And those are courageous people.
I know bunches of people that are in the process of doing the documentation to be able to move out of the United States into other areas. And they're getting the financial stuff put together, and they're finding places that will let you in if you fill out the right papers now. You can go there and become part of some other place. But you got to do this. You got to do the right stuff.
Right.
You can't just come there and walk across and say, hey, I'm here, because they shut the door on you. They're not interested in that.
And there are some countries right now that are making it more difficult for folks, for U.S. citizens to migrate.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And, for instance, the one I just heard this week, I haven't verified this, but this week being, this is December, the first week of December 2024, is there's these towns in Italy where they say, come and buy a house for a dollar. And they've had this going on for decades. Well,
yeah,
at least for years.
That, yeah.
Well, evidently they're up in the game. They're just really pushing into that, so that it's becoming even more easy. They're trying to get rid of the border. They're trying to get rid of the hurdles that were keeping folks from doing that.
I'm going to Italy.
Italy and Japan have a similar issue, which is an aging population and rural areas, which, you know, you're comfortable in, but rural areas where there are houses that, as the town shrinks, there's a value to having somebody just live in that house and maintain that house so that it doesn't become a ruin. So that somebody keeps the roof fixed and keeps the plumbing working and things like that. To the point that, because, you know, if the country ever turns around, which you always hope it will,
yeah,
then what you're really hiring is you're hiring immigrants to come in and be stewards of that property.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was just talking to a friend of mine just earlier than this. It's a friend of mine who's on a whim can go build a laundry room in his house. I mean, you know, it's a pedestrian thing, but he's got all the skills to do the plumbing and the electrical and the concrete and the framing. And you know, he's got all those skills. Now, he's working on a house here. But how many Americans do you know? How many folks do you know who would be happy to get rid of the uncertainty of life now?
Not many.
And get to some place where, give me the tools, give me the hardware, give me the money to find the tools and the hardware and the materials, and I'll go fix up an 1800, you know, stucco house in a mountain village in Florida.
Maddie, as a person who used to have a construction business and is quite knowledgeable about all the things you just went over,
yeah,
that most people aren't that knowledgeable about, I can tell you from the people that used to call me up and ask me to help them with this, that, and the other thing, and that still do it sometimes. The
sure.
people that know me well and say, hey, Steve, can you tell me about blah? And
yeah.
they ask me, you know, what do I know about the fact that the back door doesn't open and shut anymore, right? What do you do about that?
Right.
So I say to them, oh, you find one of those people that has a truck, and when you look in the truck, you'll notice the truck is all filled with these boxes that are filled with tools, like hammers and saws and stuff like that, and you call that guy up and ask him to come and fix it for you. That's what you do.
Yep.
And because if you're asking me to tell you how to do it, you got to be kidding me. I mean, this isn't like you just do it. You got to know what you're doing to do it.
So in terms of finding creative solutions then for the next few years, it might not be a case of some, you know, new sociological thing. It's finding a handyman. who also may be a handy woman.
Finding a handy person. That's right.
Or and becoming one yourself.
There's some good handy women, so you can generalize that to person and be accurate. And all of that stuff, that a huge significantly part of the United States don't have a clue how to deal with any of the things we're talking about now.
Yeah.
And they are still among the group of people that think, well, we'll just pick up and we'll move and we'll become part of whatever. And I'm particularly fascinated by the ones that have never lived anywhere but in a city, who seem to have this idea that you can just move out into nowhere and it'll be okay, it'll work out. That apparently these people that will take care of everything, they grow in the weeds or something and pop up when somebody who's never been there before shows up and wants to live there.
Yeah, I'm gonna. What plant am I gonna be wrong about? I'm gonna grow bananas in my backyard. No, but I like bananas. It don't matter.
Yes.
And, if there are no monkeys swinging from the trees, you probably don't have the right climate for a banana.
And I've got to remember. And I'm sure that it'll be easy for me to figure out how to ensure that there's always enough water to keep the things growing that I need to eat. And I don't have to worry about it getting too cold and freezing things so that they all die. And then, of course, what if those big animals start coming in here and they get hungry and they start eating all this stuff?
Uh-huh.
And eating me, for that matter, some big animals.
I mean, black bears are cute, and black bears are bears, and there are folks that dismiss them, and there are folks that are worried about them at the same time. It's like, well, you just have to be it's like any threat. You have to be real about it. And there's a great video I just saw. You know, one of these things that gets passed around in social media. But a town just north of the border here in Canada. And it was a suburb, because Vancouver's a city. It's a metropolis. Yeah. This is a suburb of the metropolis, so it's closer to the mountains. And the guy was just backing his car out of the garage, and he went into the house, and he came back out to put something in the car. And in the meantime, a black bear was checking out his garage.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't the middle of the night. It was the middle of the afternoon, but the black bear just happened to be wandering on by. I wonder what's in here, you know?
When I was living way, way north in the woods, in my cabins up in the woods and so forth, it was not uncommon to see big critters standing outside the cabin.
Yeah.
And like looking around and doing whatever they were doing. And, you know, people that would see it would freak out and they'd say, "What do you do?" And I would say, "Oh, well, you just have to know how you walk over and make them go away."
Right.
It's not by taking your head and pushing him. You don't do that.
No, as a matter of fact, this one guy was smart enough. You know what he did? He backed away slowly. He made himself look bigger. He put the hands up because he lives this life. He understands it. And of course, he also wasn't so stupid as to just keep pushing that to the extent that he could, because at some point he backed up to his car and he jumped in the car and he drove away.
There you go. But you know, the other thing was when I was living in the most remote place, where I was way up a dirt road, way up a dirt road, up in the mountains, up a dirt road, and it was a dirt road that when you got, I was at the end of where you could anytime during the year get to, and half of that was walking, by the way.
Sure. Yeah.
The road did not work in the winter and stuff, and what was fascinating to me, and I had another guy, the two of us had this cabin and we're living there, and what used to happen was we heated it with wood, and we were there. We were just hanging out there and doing our thing and running the thing. And on a regular basis, somebody would come walking down from up the mountain, because our house was up on the mountain, but the mountain was way high up, even past where we were.
Right.
So they would have gotten up there somehow in a car, and then the car had stopped, and then we were the only place they could walk to where it looked like there might be somebody. So they would knock on the door and ask for help. Mm-hmm. And we would wind up saving people, because they all came from like New York City, and we would ask them, what were you thinking? You're driving on a dirt road in the middle of winter when there's many feet of snow over everything, including the road, by the way.
Right. That's why the car's stuck.
You have this summer car from New York City, and what were you thinking? You're way up this mountain, and you are far from where you can get anywhere where there's civilization.
Okay, so
the person would say, we'd say, what were you thinking? And they would say, well, it's a four-wheel drive car, and so it goes anywhere. And we said, no, you don't understand. It doesn't go anywhere. It goes in places where somebody that, first of all, knows how to drive a four-wheel drive car and can drive it. And second of all, knowing how to drive it means they're smart enough to understand where the places are that you don't go to.
Right.
Because the four wheels don't work in a lot of places. And so we would explain that whole thing to them, because we were nice guys. And I would always ask them, how did you not notice when you, the part of the road that was paved all of a sudden wasn't paved anymore, and you just kept driving, and as far as you could look in any direction were just piles of snow covering everything, really deep, and you kept driving into it, and then finally you didn't get that far because the car stopped on you, and that's when you were lucky enough to get stuck in a place where you could walk to us before you froze to death. And they invariably would say, well, we got a map and we have four-wheel drive. And I would say, you got a map, can you show me the map? And the ones that some would say, no, I lost the map, or I dropped the map, or
well,
whatever.
Or there's a line on the map. I should be able to draw on it. The driver
would say, yeah, here's a picture of this map that I got, and it showed the road and everything. And I said, fine, but you forgot to read the map.
Right.
And they would say, what are you talking about? I said, well, you see here, this part here, that's the part you can't drive on in the winter. And it tells you that. And you just drove up, went into the part you can't drive on in the winter. And the reason you can't drive on in the winter is because things happen like what happened to you. There's no road anymore because it's just snow. And you can't go up there because nothing can go up there. And four-wheel drive doesn't help you.
Okay, so
you need to have something that's beyond four-wheel drive basic, but like heavy work trucks that have the big super tires.
Oh, no, and there's some point where you just cannot get through.
And some places,
even they can't get through. I mean,
they have to plow their way through if they can. That's it.
And out here we have the stuff where, you know, you would have to have a snowcat to be able to get through. And even the snowcats will get stuck.
Yeah. So everything gets stuck when it's like that.
Just to use that as an example. So that's, you know, a person that's gotten used to doing something, gotten used to trusting something. They took it too far. They didn't check their own assumptions. But the majority of folks in the United States, over the next 4 years, we're going to have millions of people doing what? That's going to be a great example of that, where it's not just a few folks trying to drive, but I'd
be knocking on your door at your cabin that you have, your little house that you have, and they're going to be wondering if you can have 37 people bunk in with you for a couple of months while they figure out how to get out of the blizzard that they're buried in.
Or at least the financial blizzard. See, that's the thing, is what I like for the experiences that you and I have had. We've both in places where there was a lack. But what I haven't resolved yet for myself is hard to imagine, but there's going to be something that's going to happen that is going to be some system that all of a sudden, let's say if Social Security was an easy one to point at. If Social Security goes away, what kind of solutions are folks going to be hunting for to fill that gap? And the one solution that keeps coming to mind is folks will have to sell their houses. Because a lot of folks, if you don't have Social Security, I know a lot of folks that have nothing.
Yeah, it's hard to live in your house without any money.
And I'm wondering, so over the next few years, I don't think it's going to be as much the ideological debates. And I don't think it's necessarily going to be the kind of things that you and I saw out on the fringes. Mm-hmm. There's going to be something that's happening in the core part of our society.
Yeah.
That is going to require millions of people to all of a sudden go, oh, that doesn't work anymore? Oh, that's what that meant when that didn't work anymore? And I'm fascinated by trying to understand how many folks are going to be victimized and how many folks are actually going to find solutions that they wouldn't have found other ways. And I'm not saying that you should have an answer for that, but that's where my head is with all this, is what's going to come next.
Well, I agree with you that it's a big question of what's going to come next all over the place. And I don't think anybody has an answer to that. And I think that there's not a whole lot of people that are thinking about it. In ways that are actually might be rational as possibilities and things that could actually be done or worked on or... Mm-hmm. help to fix the problem that was created. I think there's a lot of people that just think it's going to happen. They live in the, oh, I won't worry about it because somebody will do something world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Without thinking about the fact that, well, everybody's going to be having the same problem. There are not a lot mm-hmm. of other people out there. They're all having the same issues.
Well, and it goes to that very same thing we were talking earlier about migration, where I know folks who wouldn't it be nice to live in Italy? Wouldn't it be nice to live in Japan? And all of a sudden they're kind of going, what does it take to live in Japan? What does it really take to live in Italy? And no, very few of them have an obvious answer immediately at hand. I'm glad to see they're doing the research, and I'm fascinated to see how much more work is required. Now, you know, I don't have that option that I know of, at least. I don't have the skills that you do. I made a three-legged table and it wobbled. Woodcrafters can understand how impossible that is, but I did it. But I sold my conventional bungalow, which was small to start with, and I've moved to a tiny house on the mainland.
Mm-hmm.
That's my move. Now, I may want to move to a piece of land, but I'm probably not going to be moving to Italy and fixing up, you know, some archaic.
Your house, which is fairly easy to take care of because it's a little house.
Yeah.
So you don't have as much of this other crap to take care of as everybody else does.
Right. I mean, it still has its own issues. So, matter of fact, if you lived here, I would ask you over to help me fix this one bit of plumbing that I've got in mind.
Well, that's okay. But, you know, but that's one little bit of plumbing or something. It's not like a whole house worth of stuff that you've got.
So that's what I'm going to be curious to watch for the next, like say, intriguing creativity. I think this is going to be a time that I know that I am avoiding an awful lot of the news, because I think a lot of the news is the news going, how did we get this wrong? Or how did we get this right? Or, oh my God, you know, what really happened?
Well, the news is really depressing, because you happen to mention, you know, what happens when there's no more Social Security, and I just happened to see in the last couple of days that one of the sheet that was put out by our new president, which talks about all the things that he is going to do as soon as he is inaugurated as president and gets underway. And one of the first things that is on the list is they're going to cut Social Security significantly, right, to save a whole bunch of money. So
that's why I mentioned it, yeah. Because that's,
but they're going to, so the people that are giving up that money are really going to be in trouble, because it's not like there's any other place to go. The Social Security went away. Now what do I do?
And that's what I was talking about, the why I sold my house when I did. Because last year I was thinking about this, and I realized, whether it was Donald Trump or somebody else or something else, I didn't want to be in debt. Especially, I didn't want to be in a debt that I wasn't able to afford to keep up. So now I'm debt-free, so I'm disconnected from an awful lot of the interest rate issues and things like that. And I'm also in a much tinier house, which, like you say, is easier to fix. So I've taken my actions as far as I think I can. Then the next year, it'd be nice to be able to buy a piece of land to put a house, put my house onto it, because having land is one of those acts where you now have just bought resources, and you've bought some things. You can find water. You can find a place to put in a storage unit or a storage shed or something like that. You have options, which, for instance, I don't do because I'm in a mobile home park. But if millions of people all of a sudden no longer have Social Security and they have to sell their houses, putting a million houses onto the market all of a sudden is going to just knock house prices down, which is can be good from one point of view. But now, what are those millions of people going to do? And I don't know that there's a solution that actually works for all of them.
Yeah, and I'm pretty lucky from the standpoint that I don't have much debt. I have a little debt, but not much debt. And I looked at what was happening in the world a long time ago, and the situation and what I needed to do. And I was lucky enough to be in a position where I could pull enough money together to have an investment account, which I have. So I have an investment account that enables me to not worry about as much as some people. Now, I'm not a billionaire or a millionaire or one of those big numbers. So what I have is enough to, like, for me to live my pretty simple life.
That's what a friend of mine calls a thousandaire.
Yeah, a thousandaire, whatever. And to go around and to make it all work and bring in a little extra money here and there and stuff like that to balance it out. And But I always wonder how many people really don't have anything.
Right.
You know, what's the number of people that really don't have anything? They have Social Security. Okay, it's fine if you have Social Security. But that's what they have. And they work at the Wawa. And so they have a little bit of money coming in from, you know, doing whatever they do for Mr. Wawa to make their income, which is probably not huge, you know, if you're the person that, like, runs the cash register,
right,
to take the money when somebody buys something. You need more than that to live in any place that's decent house, decent size house in any kind of big community or well-off community or whatever. So it's an interesting conundrum as anybody keeps thinking about it. You keep coming up with these lists of things and looking at it, and the things to look at keep expanding, the things to do about the things to look at don't keep expanding. they just keep like hanging there saying, now what? Now what do you do? Mm-hmm. Now what do you do?
Well, sir, I'll tell you what. What we've done is for the last 12 months we've done this, and I think I'd like to keep going on for another 12 months or more. You know, once a month do these episodes. Welcome to the end of the first year of Intriguing Creativity, which we had no clue what was going to happen.
Jeff, thank you for listening, and I hope you keep listening. I hope you tell your friends, and most of you are probably still getting it from what we send out, which is how we started doing it. But we should tell you that we're now on
Spotify.
We actually did something like we've been talking about. we moved from us having to squeeze the words out ourselves to get it to you and hope it makes it, to we now have somebody else who will send it to you.
Spotify. And I wouldn't actually say it's a person. For all I know, it's an AI. It's an artificial intelligence.
Yeah, I shouldn't have said person. You're right. But we have a thing which allows you to sign up with it. And when you sign up with it, it so nicely will send this to you on a regular basis. And you will get to listen to it whenever you want, however you want, through the genius of Spotify. Now that, of course, means as long as Spotify keeps being in a place that hasn't decided that it's going to join another place that doesn't have electricity, so it won't be able to send it even from there to you. But we'll still be able to send it because we just do it by squeezing the thing and squeezing it out to you.
We both have that background that says, okay, we're going to find a slick way to do this, and at the same time, we're going to make sure that there's a pickup truck version that can get this thing delivered to you. Okay, sir. Well, I think that's about enough for today. I know that the thing I think is funny is I had a list of things I wanted to talk about, and we didn't get towards any of those because there's always more than enough to talk about. And I thank you all for listening in. Again, this is Intriguing Creativity with Steve Smilinski and Tom Trimbath.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to say, sir?
Dear friends to listen, please. You keep listening too, please. And send us comments. We love hearing from people. So feel free to send us a comment, you know, and tell us whatever you want. Ask us whatever you want.
That was the part I was waiting for, because I know you always say that and I always forget to.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Hear from people when they send us a note and ask something or tell us something or whatever.
Yeah. So we'll close out the year and Happy New Year and all that sort of thing. And this is Tom and this is
Steve here.
And we'll
Thank you all.
And welcome to the ride.
Yeah.
Welcome to the ride we're going to have in 2025.
Yep. And may you also have a good ride in the year to come. And in spite of our wonders about what's going to happen in the world, may all of us, including all of you, make it work somehow. get through the next year, all well, all good, all feeling happy, and having fun.
The watch order is now going to be somehow.
Yeah.
Okay, so the little red button's going to go off, and...